Coming up on today's show...
There's always somebody better than you. Just remember that. There's always somebody better than you. So the best thing you can do is just remember that and always be nice because you don't know who's who.
What's a girl like her doing in a bar like you? Little lowbrow diving them high heels.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on location at the Radio Sobro Studios in Nashville, my guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player who has had over 30 independent cuts. He was originally a drummer and toured the Southeast before focusing his career on songwriting. He has performed all the way down in Key West, Florida, lots of shows here in Music City, out west in places like Arizona, and even overseas in Europe. He is also a business partner in Nashville Nights, which we'll hear about today as well. And his songs have been described as, they quote, will have you laughing then crying as he takes you on a roller coaster ride of emotions, end quote. You've been hearing a song of his called Bar Like You. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Lee Tucker.
Hey, Bruce. What's up, buddy? It's great to meet you today, finally, man.
yeah, for sure. Thank you, sir, making time to do this.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me.
Let's get started by having you first share with the audience all about the song that was just playing called Bar Like You.
Okay, so that song actually, I came up with that idea. I had gone out to Losers. If you've ever been to Nashville, you've probably been to Losers. It's a great bar. But anyway, so we had gone out and I got home and the new documentary about Dean Dillon, Tennessee Whiskey, he wrote Tennessee Whiskey, in case you didn't know, and got 50-something George Strait songs as well. And anyway, so I decided I was going to watch the movie Tennessee Whiskey, a Dean Dillon story. And so once I started that, I was like, man, just what a great writer. How do you come up with things like The Chair and things like that? So I was watching it and I was like, I want to write like that, you know? So I came up with the idea because, you know, what's a cliche saying that I could twist and make it cool? And it was like, you know, what's a girl like this doing in a bar like you, instead of what's a girl like you doing in a bar like this? So instead, we're talking to the bar the whole time. Like, we're here all the time, and she's not your usual type. Girls like that don't come into these, you know, kind of honky-tonks or whatever. And so that's kind of where the idea originated. And then I got my buddy, Nate Kenyon, actually got signed over at Anthem, got a publishing deal. And my buddy Tyler Hammond and Dustin Herring came in, and I threw the idea out, and they're like, oh, yeah, let's run with that one. So that's how we wrote it. We wrote it over Anthem, and I took it and recorded it, and I just love the song. I think it's really great. It's a great nod to Dean Dillon. And the line in The Chair is the reason that they gave me that idea, where he goes, you know, oh, thank you, can I drink you a bye? Oh, listen to me, what I mean is, can I buy you a drink? So that's kind of what nodded to Dean Dillon in that song, him and Hank Cochran both.
That's so cool. And I can picture you showing that song to your co-writers and them just going, man, I wish I had come up with that. Are there times when you go into a write, Lee, when people will throw out a song idea and you're not going to have that reaction, but you don't want to insult the person and go, eh, not really feeling it? Because that has to be exciting to go in with such a cool hook and people go, man, I wish I'd come up with that one. And they're happy to be in the room with you to write it. But how does that go when you're listening to someone pick something? You're like, yeah, it's all right.
For every 200 song ideas you get, one of them is like that one. So we're all in that, you know, boat where we throw a song idea out. And sometimes we even think it's as good as something like that, and nobody bites on it. What's funny, I've got a song that I love stand-up comedy, and I had an idea that I threw around the room, around town for like 3 years. And it's basically, grandma got a prescription for marijuana because of her glaucoma, And I would say, hey, I want to write this. It'll be hilarious at writer's rounds. And it's cookies ain't the only thing getting baked at grandma's house. So anyways, I had this idea and everybody's like, oh, that's funny as crap. What do you really want to write? So I'd be like, all right, well, I got this, this, what you got. And then we pick something else. Well, finally, after 3 years of throwing this song around, I pitched it in a room with Matt Rogers and JC Anderson. Matt's like, I'll write the crap out of that. Let's get it. And now I always joke that I'm waiting on somebody to pick me up with a follow-up to that song called The Screen Door Ain't the Only Thing Getting Banged at Grandma's House, but nobody's done that yet. So anyways, yeah, that's been a great experience of writing that one and playing it out. It's so fun.
But getting back to the pitch that someone puts out that you're not feeling that great about, is there an unwritten rule in Nashville where it's, you know, you just smile and you try to write it with them? Or is it, no, we all want to help each other and let each other know, like, look, I'm not really feeling that.
So you know, honestly, a lot of times you'll have three or four people in there and we're all just reading. You know, I got this idea. I saw a butterfly the other day and it's, you got to earn your wings somehow. And you can read the room and be like, all right, nobody really liked that one. Let me read another one. So you don't like, okay. Y'all don't like that. You don't ask, you just know.
Okay. Okay.
And then when you say one people do like, or they say one, everybody's like, oh man, that's cool. Let's write that one.
I mentioned in the intro that we are on location in Nashville, but as we start to tell your story, share with the audience where you're from originally, including a good description of where specifically it is, because we do have folks in other countries that have never been to the U.S. So in a way that they'll know where you're talking about, regardless of maybe never having set foot on U.S. soil.
Okay. I'm from a little town called Hazelhurst, Georgia. It's 7 hours south of here in Nashville. And, man, we're 2 hours from anywhere you want to be. We're 2 hours west of Savannah, 2 hours south of Macon, Georgia, and 2 hours north of Valdosta, Georgia.
I was waiting for you to give it in the context of Atlanta.
Oh, Atlanta, 3 hours south of Atlanta. So what's funny is Macon is an hour south of Atlanta, but to us people from South Georgia, anything above Macon is Atlanta. We don't know. It might as well be New York or something, you know. So we joke and there's a thing, you know. So I was at a bar at Losers. That's kind of where everybody hangs out. Losers and Red Door and Live Oak. So we were at Losers one night and it's like 1 a.m. and we've several beverages deep at this point. And Trick Savage and Blue were sitting at this bar and I didn't really know them. I'd seen them around and I talked to them earlier in the evening and I'm standing there and I'm talking and this girl goes, oh my God, I love your accent. Where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from Georgia. She's like, me too. And I was like, what part? She's like, said something, you know, up yonder. I was like, oh, hell, that's above the Macon-Dixon line. That don't count. You know, just joking. And Blue's like, what? What? You know, and literally they canceled 2 writes the next day and showed up at my apartment at 11 a.m. And we wrote a song called Macon-Dixon Line.
Wow.
So that's how things happen. That's how cool I built that. My relationship with Blue Foley and Trick Savage, you know, wow. And that was probably 6 years ago almost.
Say the name of the town again.
Hazelhurst.
And is it one of these, you know, population 212?
It's pretty small. It ain't that small. It's probably around the 10,000 mark. Mm-hmm. I'm sure y'all have heard of, well, y'all call them Vidalia onions. If you're from there, it's Vidalia. Ain't no L in it. So Vidalia onions. So I'm 25 miles from Vidalia.
Okay. I was always taught Vidalia onions.
Yep. Well, they even sung the song Vidalia. Anyways, but yeah, it's Vidalia if you're from there. So yes, sir.
How did you get into music and at what age? And for that matter, was it singing first or was it playing an instrument first?
So, you know, kids are mean. And I was in the 7th grade. And my best friend at the time in 7th grade had started hanging around some other, you know, kids. And he's like, man, we're going to start a band and you can't be in it because you can't play anything. So for my birthday, I was like 12. I asked my dad for a guitar. And so he got me a guitar and I learned to play. And the other kids ended up on drugs and then Jill and I ended up in Nashville. So that's what started me. So I got a guitar when I was like 12, and I learned, man, by the time I was 15, I could play like 38 Nirvana songs. I knew every Everclear, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Green Day, Metallica. That was what, you know, I started playing. And it's funny because growing up in a small town, I've always been country and love country music, but I also love rock music. So it's kind of fun to, you know, to think of where that came from. Then at 15, being in a small town, trying to find a drummer. I knew people that could play the drums, but they didn't have a drum set. So I actually found somebody getting rid of a drum set and got the drum set for like $150 from the manager of Dairy Queen, I think, back home. And so that way I had a drum set at the house. So that way I could get my friend that plays drums to come over and play drums and bang on them while I was playing guitar. You know, so after he would leave, I would get back there and tap around. So that's how I picked up drums when I was 15, guitar when I was 12. And now I've made a living playing drums and playing guitar and singing and stuff. So it just kind of went from there.
So guitar and drums, were they both self-taught or did you take lessons or watch YouTube videos or?
I took like, I think 3 weeks of guitar lessons when I was a kid, but that I kind of learned like four chords over that course of 3 or 4 weeks. And then there was a thing back then. This was, I don't know, in the mid to late 90s. And so there was a website called getinyourcrib.com. And I think it might have become Ultimate Guitar Tab now, but back then there was a thing called getinyourcrib.com and I could look up all of the Nirvana and Matchbox 20 and all those songs. And I literally sat there and could read the chords. And then I taught myself on the internet how to read tabs and just went from there with the internet. Dial up. So, yeah.
But then for singing, were you singing along the way or is it like, no, I was just laser focused on playing the guitar? And
really, I just wanted to be able to play guitar and sing. And it was, you know, I think one of the first songs was really hard to do was play Come As You Are by Nirvana because it's got the da-na-na-na-na-na and trying to sing while doing that. Somehow I did it. So I think I kind of learned to sing along and play all at the same time, which I'm glad I did looking back at it.
So I'm surprised that you're not telling the traditional. I have so many guests that say, I came out of the womb singing, or I was singing at three, or they say I came from a musical family, and or I came from a musical family. And so in your case, you're not saying, you know, my dad gave me guitar when I was four.
My dad couldn't play a radio, bless his heart. You know, what he did do for me was introduce me to George Jones and Keith Whitley and Earl Thomas Conley and, you know. And so I got some exposure to good country music, and he always listened to the country FM station. My mom was more into the 80s pop, like Janet Jackson and that kind of stuff. And so I knew all the 80s stuff, but I didn't like it. I just knew it. And my dad played that. So nobody really listened to rock. And then I found rock, you know, like Metallica's Black Album and Green Day's Dookie Album. And, you know, The Offspring, their first album. When I heard Self Esteem in like the seventh grade, I just lost my mind. It was like, oh my God, this is awesome. So anyway, so yeah, that's where all that came from.
So before I ask you, let's keep it on the back burner for a minute. I'm not going to ask you about how you got to Nashville yet, because I want to know when you were doing everything that you just described, teaching yourself guitar and eventually teaching yourself drums, like, was it just for fun? Or did you think to yourself, like, this might be something I might want to pursue as a career? Or is it like, well, hold on, Bruce, not as a career. I just thought like, maybe I could make a band.
It's weird because I did have like little punk bands and stuff back in the day in the garage and stuff like that. Like I said, I got the drum set, then I could invite my friend over and we wrote, you know, songs back then. Even when I was 15, I was writing songs that didn't make any sense probably, but it was something. And we just played like the whole Green Day Dookie album and Blink-182's Dude Ranch album and all this stuff. And then, of course, we had the Sweet Home Alabama, Freebird, and we played all this stuff the best we could. Definitely not to par with those guys. But, yeah, it was so much fun just being able to play. And see, so I never really thought about, you know, doing it as a career. It's just something I did. And I always said, even if I left Nashville, I mean, being a songwriter, if it never pays a bill, that's just something I'll do. If I get an idea, I'll grab my guitar and sit on the corner of the bed at 2 a.m. and get the idea out, because that's just who I am. You know, that's who I've always been. I think since I got a guitar was just to express and have a great time with it. And I love it. there's nothing else I'd rather do.
Okay, so I asked you about the guitar, I asked you about the drums, I asked you about singing, and you just started to scratch the surface. But I want to revisit when the light bulb finally went on where you thought, songwriting.
Man, I think it's weird because I remember ninth grade, and I'd already been playing guitar at that point, but ninth grade, I remember writing, you know, taking English class, and I did really good in English, and I loved the, you know, dark stuff like Emily Dickinson, William Blake, and all the, and I just really liked that crazy stuff because I've always loved, you know, it sounds weird, but serial killers and scary movies. I grew up loving Jason and Freddy and the whole 80s Killer Clowns from Outer Space, stupid stuff. And so I think that poetry side and everything, I was writing like crazy stuff, even, you know, in ninth grade and everything. And I think that led me to writing songs, you know, even at 15 years old. And I remember most of them, for some reason, even in like the third grade, I stole my mom's earrings and gave them to a girl I liked. So I've always like just very passionate, like, like I really like this girl. She's cute. I want to give her something and make her happy. And so there was that. And then I think, you know, when you're young and you're 13 and 14 and 15, like, so I guess I was already writing. So then I would just write down my feelings and I would try to make them rhyme. And that turned into putting chords with it and turning it into a song.
Wow.
I don't think any of them were good. Probably not. They just rhymed.
But it laid the foundation and it started to give you a vision for, hey, I could do something with this.
Yeah, I guess. Man, honestly, I really wanted to do it when I was like 20. I had a punk band called Running for Office. And being in a small town, we had to drive like an hour and a half to go play our first show at a place called Over Coffee Cafe in Hinesville, Georgia. So I borrowed an enclosed trailer from a friend. I drug it an hour and a half down the road to play this show. And we made $22. And I said, I'm never doing this crap again. I'm over it. I'm done. Like, I got bills. So, yeah, that was my experience.
If I'm going to drive an hour and a half, I got to get at least 25. This 22 is for the birds.
Dude, if we would have been somewhere like Jacksonville, Florida or something, it would have been cool.
Yeah.
But South Georgia, nah, it don't work. It doesn't work down there. So then I actually paid like $500 and had a CD made. And I sent it to the lead singer of Goldfinger. And I just knew, like, because he discovered a band called The Used and a lot of other people. And I sent it to him, and I never heard anything back. So I was like, all right, well, forget this. And then my dad's like, well, you know, you just write songs. You know, country musicians don't write their own songs. And at the time, I was very like, well, that's stupid. Like, I just felt like they're not expressing themselves. They're telling everybody else's stories. Like, I feel like they're still in somebody else's life and sharing it and telling it as their own. Now I'm glad they do that. So, you know, but at the time I'm like 20. So I'm like, you know, I don't think Roger Daltrey was out there writing somebody else's and telling their story, you know, whatever. So I'm glad that I found where, being able, I can write my own things, even if I'm not the greatest singer in the world or whatever, I can have it put out there and somebody else can sing it. I really don't care as long as people connect. And I think that's why I love to write, is because regardless if it's, you know, losing a parent like I have, or if it's, you know, whatever it is, if you're going through a breakup, if you're just having a great day, I got a song for you. And I want people to go, wow, I relate to that. I feel like I could have wrote that song, you know, like it's just something about a song that makes you go, either you sympathize or you empathize, like one or the other, like you can really feel what that person. So you get to know somebody through their songs. And I really love that about music.
Going back though, to where you just left us in your journey musically, I have to ask then, what brought you to Nashville?
Well, right out of high school, I went to a technical school and then I got into the insurance business, doing an old-timey debit where you go by, you know, grandma's house and get the money out of the little book that hangs behind the door and collecting weekly premiums, I guess. And so I did that for about, I don't know, 4 years. And then I went to work as a prison guard for 3 years and left there. And then I got offered a position playing drums for a band in South Georgia. We just started this band, and I did that for like 4 years with a band. And then after the band ended, Well, even before it ended, I actually went back, got my insurance license back because I'm like, I need some money. Like, I'm living like $1,000 a month as a musician, not really cutting it. You know, it's time to make some money. So I started my insurance business in August of 2013 doing Medicare plans for seniors. And so once I did that, I actually built up enough residual income that I could afford to move to Nashville. And actually, because I was making good money, but in my little town, the sidewalks roll up at 9 o'clock. It's a dry county. I'm like, I want to be able to get a good drink, a good steak, and hear some live music. And I'm like, where else is better to go than that? You know? So that's kind of what brought me here. And I didn't move here for music. What's crazy, I didn't know what an Uber was. My roommate at the time, he's like, you ain't got to call a cab, dude. Just download Uber. I'm like, what's that? Turns out my first Uber driver was Andrea Goodman, which is a songwriter. I think she just moved out to Texas, but she explained what a writer's round was, and I had no idea.
Wow.
And she got my number, and 2 nights later, I wasn't expecting, I got a text or a call, and she's like, hey, you know, we had somebody cancel at Belcourt Taps. Do you want to come play some of your songs? I remember you telling me that you had wrote some songs.
Wow.
I was terrified, dude. I had no idea what I was in for. And it's so crazy because I didn't move here to do that, but I had enough songs. So I was like, okay, cool. You know, this girl's going to ask me to come and do it. And, you know, so had a couple drinks, got on stage, played, you know, 3 or 4 original songs. And made some friends there that night that I'm still friends with. I still play rounds with. And from there, they invited me to play different rounds around town. And then I met new writers at every writers round I went to. And then it turned into, hey, man, I like your songs. We should write.
Wow.
And then you start writing with them. And then you start playing more and more shows. And it just kind of grew this really cool. And it's awesome. Now I probably have, you know, over 100 friends that are songwriters. And
yeah, I was
going
to ask you, I'm glad you started to go there, because I was going to ask you, how did you end up playing shows in Nashville? And it sounds like putting in the time and just talking to people.
Yeah, just being here. I mean, it's crazy because I know, you know, Blue was doing his interview earlier with you, and he's like, you can do it from home. And you can build your social media following and stuff, but I don't feel like you really get it until you're here. And even if that means coming to town and staying 1 week a month and you set up those writes and you go to those co-writes and get in those rooms. And I mean, you write at least 1, if not 2 songs a day that you're here. And you do that until you see and you make those relationships and build those. And then it could become, you never know, you know, if you're good enough, hey, I've seen people come to town and they're signing a pub deal, paying $2,500 a month before they even, you know, play the writer's round or whatever,
wow.
You know,
wow.
Just by coming and writing with people, and you get in the right rooms and you go to the right bars at the right time and just happen to meet somebody and they're like, wow, they're awesome. They're great. Send me some stuff. Let me hear it. And then you send it to them and they're like, I'd love to sit down and have a meeting with you, you know, or whatever. So you never know what's going to happen. And just being here in town, you just don't know until you get here.
I'm curious, though, when you said before that they roll up the sidewalks at 9 o'clock, there's nothing to do there. You want a place you can get a good drink, get a good steak, listen to some live music. Was it ever a consideration, maybe I'll just move up to Atlanta? Or was it always like, if I was going to go anywhere, I was going to go to Nashville? I mean, obviously, you could have gone to New York and LA or whatever, but...
Well,
I'm just talking about proximity.
As far as I think it's because I don't think Atlanta has what I want. You know, nothing against it, but they're more and I'm more like sad country songs. And that's what I needed in my life. And that's what I got. You know, I just feel like this is a lot more my speed, if you will. Now, the Midtown songwriter scene, Red Door, Live Oak, local, it's fun, it's great. And then you go out towards the Opry and you got places like Scoreboard and Music City Bar and Grill and Nashville Palace, and those are just places you can go hear all the B-side Earl Thomas Conley and Keith Whitley and just songs that you haven't heard in forever, and somebody's up there singing them as good or better than the original artist sometimes, because there's some just amazing talent in this town. And what I love about that out there is they're not trying to be somebody they're not, I feel. And what I mean by that, I guess, you know, when you're here a long time, you see a lot of people that I'm country and they've never owned a pair of boots. And the only pair they got, they went to Boot Barn that day and got the damn things. And now they're a country singer, you know, and good for you. But I feel like you should just be who you are, regardless if that's wearing, you know, Air Force Ones and whatever. If that's who you are, then be that. Quit trying to be something you're not just because it's cool at the time or just because it's a trend at the time. I think you'll get a lot further if you're genuine, because people can tell.
And I'm wondering if the people that you're bragging about that are saying, oh my gosh, these people are so talented out at Scoreboard and out at Nashville Palace, if they didn't come here and go, you know what? I got a good voice, but it's Nashville, so the bar is set really high. So I'm going to sing cover songs because I don't write. So I'm going to go to those places, and people will notice me because I'm really talented.
Yeah. So it's crazy because I got a lot of friends that play Broadway, and they're great. And what you learn about Nashville is maybe it's a guitar player or a drummer that doesn't even sing. They don't even write songs, but they love playing drums. Guess what? You can make a living doing that. More so than you could if you was, you know, to work a regular 9-to-5. Yeah. You can make more money doing what you love. Probably different hours. But I mean, I do have those friends that, you know, they play the 10-to-2 shift on Broadway. And then they will turn right around and play the 10-to-2 shift that night. They'll play 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and then turn around and play the 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. that night. Some of them even have played triples. But I mean, their bills are paid and they're doing what they love, and they don't just hate clocking in and doing something they don't believe in or love. And so salute to those people. But what's also great is for the ones that do come here, and you're right, it's like, what's going to make me stand out? I have a great voice. But so there's a difference. I have a lot of friends that are singer songwriters and man, they are awesome at what they do, but it's not paying bills. So they may drive 4 or 5 hours and play a show for $400-$500 acoustic gig. That pays the bills. The songwriting stuff is because they love it, and we hope that someday pays the bills.
Wow.
you can get a regular job and clock in, or you can continue to do what you love and not be like, oh, I gotta stock these shelves or whatever it is you gotta do, you know?
Nicely said.
Yeah.
Now, see, at the start, I only said guitar player, so let me change that now, and instead, I'm going to say, I am joined today on location at the Radio Sobro Studios in Nashville by singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Lee Tucker. Visit his official website at leetuckermusic.com. I will put a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. There's some really cool merch on his website, by the way, so be sure to check that out. Lee's music is streaming on Spotify, so do give him a follow there. Support Lee, though, by purchasing downloads of his originals through Apple Music. On his website, you will see links for Lee on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Do also look for him on TikTok, by the way, where he is at Lee Tucker Music. I need to make clear that I am quite active on LinkedIn. I post on my page and on my agency's page on there probably more days of the week than not. So when you hear me talk about the OWL app and I say that its founder calls it LinkedIn on steroids, or when I talk about not having to wait for people to accept your connection request or see if they'll answer your DM or not, it by no means is intended as me not using or liking that platform. But why not expand your options? Not everyone is on both. So get the OWL app. It's a free download. And make helpful connections through there with, again, the difference being via actual voice calls. If you've been hearing me talk about this for a while and you say, I'm still not sure I understand it, download the app for free and then call me on there and I will help you get your feet wet. Read more by going to my podcast website, nhte.net, and then click anywhere it says home and then read the article under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. There are links in there to download OWL for free from the App Store or Google Play. I also have my invitation code in there, which you're going to need when you're setting up OWL on your phone, because that is a required field. Get it installed and then call me and we will chat for 10 minutes, longer if you want or need. Lee, I'm sure there are people that you look up to and or maybe love getting into a room with to create some new material.
Would you
care to talk about who some of your favorite songwriters are?
Man, I have so many. I'm huge fans of a lot of my friends, and that's what's crazy. Like, man. So Dustin Herring is a great example. I saw Dustin around town. I was friends with a guy named Trey Landon. He signed over at Warner Brothers, Warner Chapel, and he's got a record deal. He's doing great things. But anyway, so I was over at his house, and I've seen Dustin, and I just thought, man, this guy's a, you know, an ass, basically. Because I'm telling you, I seen this guy around town for like 2 years, and I was like, every time I'm like, hey, bud, what's going on? He'd just kind of nod and walk off, and I was like, man, screw this dude, man. Mm. So anyways, turns out, I didn't know this till one night. Hannah Dasher, we're sitting at a bar somewhere, and she goes, do you mind if Dustin sits here? I was like, I don't give a damn what he does. And he sits down, and I'm not trying to be mean. It's just, I've tried to talk to this guy for 2 years, and now you want to sit with me? Fine. So anyways, there was kind of a conversation there where, you know, how you doing? I was like, same as you've been the last 2 years, buddy. Anyway, so we kind of told each other off a little bit, and I'm like, hey, you want to get a shot? Shit, I reckon. And we did. And so anyways, turns out he just has social anxiety. And I'm like, how can you be on stage all the time? You're one of the best singers, best songwriters, and you just have this anxiety. And it's crazy. So anyway, since then, he's still a butthole. But he's one of my best friends in the world. And so you never know who you're going to meet or what role they're going to play in your life. But man, he's one of my favorites. JC Anderson. God, he got his first pub deal. We wrote at that publishing house every day for a year, 5 days a week, it seems like, even though I didn't have a deal there. Mm. We actually had a song together that was put in a movie called Stars Fell on Alabama. It's a cheap little rom-com, but it was cool, you know, first sync placement in a movie. And God, like I said, I'm already a huge fan of Blue Foley, of course. But Matt Rogers is another friend I made. Throwing cornhole in his backyard with Justin Dukes, which is another great friend of mine I like to write with. Nate Kenyon, I think he just signed a major label deal, but I've written, actually, the two songs you're going to hear today, I wrote with Nate Kenyon, Bar Like You, and then Ending Starts. And so Nate is one of the most talented writers. You just get in a room with him and throw him an idea, and hell, you just better hit record because he's going to just spit, just vomit lyrics that are great. And you're like, what'd you just say? He's like, I don't really remember something about this. And we're like, all right, well, hold on, do that again. So yeah, he's that good. So I really like writing with Nate. He's a character too. He's great. He's from actually like 13 miles down the road in Baxley, Georgia, where I grew up, in Hazelhurst. And Trey Landon, another good friend of mine, Kenzie Coppin, Lockwood Bar, like I can't name all of them. There's so many, but yeah, there's a lot of great artists and a lot of people that you don't even know is out there, you know, until, but hey, I have so much faith in all these people. I can't wait till you hear them and see their name. I just like to think you will eventually.
Yeah. And one of those names that Lee just mentioned, Kenzie Coppin, she's been on this show twice. So what I'm going to do is on the show page for Lee's episode on my podcast website, nhte.net, I'm going to put a link to the second interview I did with Kenzie. So you can go and listen to her and I, that conversation. And then you're going to find on that page a link to her and I's first conversation. Just one thing I want to go back to from the first half of the show. So you're talking about all this songwriting right now. Do you ever play drums anymore?
I do not. It's a whole lot of setup and heavy lugging things around for very little pay.
But that's a big, for someone that I said in the intro, you toured the Southeast as a drummer.
Yeah, I've played a lot of shows while I was with my band from back home. We played all over the place, and I love playing drums. It's just doing it for a musician. I have no interest in, you know, lugging. I mean, you're on the road all the time. You're loading these heavy drums in. You're playing till 2 a.m. Then you got to take all that stuff down and load it up and get on the road again. And you're making $150-$200 a night. And I think I told you before, I own an insurance business, so I don't really have to do that anymore, luckily. So it's a lot of fun, but honestly, I'd much rather just have a drum set up at the house and I can play when I want to and, have to worry about it when I don't. Okay. But if I'm going to play out, I'd much rather be playing my songs than on the drums playing cover songs, you know?
So I like that you said that because I want to go back to the songwriting. And I do realize, obviously, that this can vary from one writer to the next. But for Lee Tucker, how does an idea turn into a song?
Man, like I said, when I started out, I would have a few ideas and then, you get in the room and you're on the spot and you forget them. So finally, I made a note in my iPhone that says song ideas, and I have like over 1,000 now, probably. And we're knocking them off one at a time, but I get new ideas every day. So you just take it into the room and I read some off. The other co-writers start reading, you know, song titles, hooks, as we call them, off. And till somebody says something that everybody's like, that's really cool. Let's write that today.
But is it 100% of the time it's always lyrics? It's not, you know, I got this really cool chord progression that it came up with, and I just want to write something using this because this thing, I just can't leave it alone. I keep playing it. Or is it like melodies later, Bruce? I don't worry about that at this start.
Sometimes what's crazy is I don't really write the music personally. I'll have a cool lick sometimes, but I don't usually bring that into the room until I find out what we're going to write. Because if the cool idea is, you know, just a love song, my lick that I got might be a rock song. So I'm not going to bring the lick in there and show it off and then leave it in the room and it's not going to get used in the song, kind of thing. Because there's, you know, all kinds of songs and all kinds of guitar licks and stuff you can bring in for different ones. So I'd rather find out what I'm writing. And personally, I like to write to the hook, me as a writer. To the hook means, like I said before, Bar Like You is, this is the song idea. I'm talking to a bar. This is what we're going to end up writing today, kind of thing. And that way we know what story we're going to tell. So now that we know what the hook of the song is or the title of the song, now we need to write the story around that. So what are we talking to the bar about, kind of thing? So if you're writing to the hook, that's how you kind of figure out what kind of song you have.
Yeah. And I imagine that it becomes a case of, it's a good problem to have, but man, I got so many song ideas here. Like, bear with me, because I did come to this right prepared, but I got a lot of good stuff here and I got to sort through which of this stuff did I already use elsewhere. And
so what's cool is, you know, I've been here almost 8 years now, and now I'm to the point where I come up with an idea, I put people's name beside it because I know, oh, well, Kenzie Coppin would be a great person to write this.
Wow.
I got an idea called Hey Hussy. She's sassy. She's funny. I want to write that with Kenzie, you know, Coppin and Lockwood Bar. And then I got this funny song about marijuana. Oh, I want to write that with my buddy Mark Oriott and Tara Thompson.
Okay.
Or, you know, so I kind of know who likes to write what and who would be good on which songs. Now, if I'm writing with a new artist or somebody that I've never written before, I just assume, ask them, what do they want to write? Do they have an idea that's on their heart they really want to write? And then sometimes they'll tell me an idea and it's a good idea. And what I like to do is try to, because I feel like in songwriting, everything's already been said. We have to find a more clever way to say it.
Mm.
So that's the way I like to write is, what's your idea? Now let's come up with a cool way of saying that that hasn't really been said before. That's kind of what I like to do.
I like that. And that's also a way of kind of not having to let down someone who might be new, someone that you've never met before, and you go, oh gosh, our very first time together, and I got to let this person know, like, that's already been done. It's more of a kind of a teaching moment, but it's also like, we're going to write it. We just got to find a different way to do it.
Yep, exactly. And the world's best I've seen is Blue Foley. Blue has this whole speech whenever you write with somebody new, like, what do you want to sing on the Opry in 5 years? Like, let's write that. That's what I want to write with you. And I'm like, holy cow, that's an awesome way to put it. Like, what is in your heart? What do you really want to say as a songwriter? And let's figure out the best way for you to get that across in your song.
Because if you go into a write with that attitude, it's going to make you kind of police yourself when you look at your phone and you go, well, I brought this song here, this idea that, like, it's all right. But oh my gosh, now that you put it that way, like, no, I wouldn't want to be doing this song on the Opry stage in 5 years.
And that's why I said moving here and writing with other people, you learn so much. Because sometimes I hear things just the way that I would do it. And then as a songwriter, you realize, well, I'm not the one that's going to be putting it on my album. This is their song. They need to do it how they would do it.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, and so you learn a lot about yourself, and then you learn how to not be so, you know, selfish in a room, I guess, or bullheaded, or if, you know, your way isn't always the best way. And what helps me with that is whenever I write with really seasoned writers that I know are better than me, You never want to be the best writer in a room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes you're going to be, but I love it whenever I'm writing with people that have just this different way of saying things. And a prime example, man, Jason Matthews. God, dude, I started writing with him. I guess it's been about a year ago now. And it's like every time we get in a room, it's just me and him. And the way that he puts things is like, I had a good idea. He had a better one. Like, he twisted my idea into something I didn't even think, you know. And melodically, he's also a good producer. So he hears all the things as we're writing it, which I do a lot because I was a drummer. So I can hear all the cool stops and cymbal chokes and stuff. But like, he hears the keys, he hears it all. And he's like,
which makes it exciting.
It does. It turns my idea into something that I never thought. And what's even cooler is, besides just getting the work tape with the acoustic guitar and the vocal on your voice memo, is whenever you get the chance to take that into a studio and see it all come to life with all the instruments and the background vocals. And
wow,
it's a crazy experience to see something that you had, you know, in your head, that you got an idea, and now it's like this thing you can literally play through your car speakers.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know.
I did mention back in the intro that you're a business partner in Nashville Nights with Blue Foley, who was on my show last week. But yes, let's hear about Nashville Nights from your perspective, in your words.
So Nashville Nights is something that I am so excited about. I actually had a similar thing called Nashville 2 that I did. I took Dustin Herring, Priscilla Block, Justin Dukes. I've had several songwriters go on the road, and we go and we do a writer's round. Same concept, except we didn't do them as often or anything. And like I said, I was the one booking most of them and everything. And Dustin was my partner in that, but he is more focused on the artist side. Mm-hmm. Whereas I really just want to be a songwriter and travel, you know, the world and play my songs with my friends. I don't care about being in the spotlight just on me. I'd much rather tell a joke and make fun of Blue on stage. You know, that's a lot more fun to me, being up there with my friends. So Dustin was busy doing that, and I was focusing more on my songwriting. And then it turns out Blue came to me and was like, I have this great idea. You've already been kind of doing this, and I've been doing
Nashville,
it.
Nashville 2.
T-O as in Nashville 2 Key West, Nashville 2 Texas, Nashville 2 Tifton, or whatever town we were playing or state. Okay. We would do that. Sorry. So that's
so
what
you
Nashville
were doing
2.
Essentially what
yes,
he,
sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. So same. And so, like I said, since Blue came to me and, you know, asked me if I would help him with that, and then it turned into, hey, you want to be a partner? And just, we have really been burning this thing at both ends, and it's coming to pay off. It is amazing, and I'm so excited about everything. And the other side is, I'm such a fan of so many songwriters, and now we'll be able to go on the road with those songwriters and put money in their pocket and help them pay bills, which is what we've all been trying to do as songwriters, and it's not the easiest thing in the world, and now we have an outlet to do that.
So I just threw out a few places back in the intro, like Arizona, Key West, obviously over in Europe. But there have certainly been lots of other destinations outside of Nashville where you've played. What are some of your favorite places that you've played or traveled to?
Oh, man. What's crazy is I played a lot of places. And one of my favorite places, rooms, and shows was the Crooner Circus. We did it's up in Cincinnati, Ohio, with our friend Noah Smith. He has Crooner Circus, which is kind of like Whiskey Jam or a freak show. He's got his own thing going in Cincinnati up at a brewery called Big Ash Brewery. Make sure that's a ash. Big Ash Brewery. And we went up there and played last Thursday. And man, there was, that's the kind of room you want to play to. It was a very much so a listening room situation. Mm. We had 8 songwriters, so 4 on stage for 1 hour and then another 4 on stage for 1 hour. And so the audience was there. It was a beautiful room, all the cool Edison light bulbs and everything, dim lighting and really nice, almost candlelight vibes. And, you know, the audience, every song, you could just hear anything, and they were really listening and absorbing your message, whatever that was, you know. And it's kind of fun because the way I start Grandma's House is kind of like Brad Paisley with the I'm Gonna Miss Her. It's really down. And I just say, you know, this song is about, we've all got grandmothers, and this song is about, you know, grandmothers and paying tribute to them and that kind of thing. And it starts off like, Granny didn't always smile this much. You know, it's been pretty hard since Papa left us, and I can see the red there in her eyes. You know, is it that new doctor that she's got? Or maybe something he's prescribed. And then, and they were all expecting this real sad song. And then I kicked off with the, well, cookies ain't the only thing getting baked at Grandma's House. And they all just freaking lit up. So it was funny because they were so ready, and it was the first song of the night. So I just wanted to set the mood, like, we're here to have some friggin' fun, people. Let's go. So anyway, so that's how that one turned out. But the room was great. The audience were great. All the writers were great. It was just a great time of people coming together for songs, even the people in the audience, not just the ones playing them. And it's great whenever you can interact and, you know, share those moments.
So speaking of live performances, tell us what's coming up for you. I think there are some shows in the works.
Man, there's a lot of them. Apparently, I know that we're going to Denmark for sure in September, but gosh, on the way up to Cincinnati, me and Blue got some calls in the car. Actually, we're looking at Iceland, Ireland, Switzerland, Norway, and England, as well as Denmark. Gosh. And then we're working on some. We just booked 2 weekends this summer up in Petoskey, Michigan. Man, shout out to Gypsy Spirits up there. We love Lake Michigan. It's beautiful up there. So we're going to be up there 2 weekends. I think we may also end up in Canada with our Warner friend that signed at Warner up in Warner Canada, Chris Buck. He's great. And also in Boston, we're going to be up there, I believe, in May. So kind of everywhere. And that's just what we've done just on the way to Cincinnati. So we got a lot more in the works. But yeah, so it looks like we're literally going to be all over the world, it feels like.
So before we close, I just want to ask you about something that you and I were talking about off air before we started recording this interview. And if you could just maybe kind of give us a short answer, just to give some insight to young songwriters who are coming back and forth to Nashville from time to time, and or young songwriters who are moving to Nashville and they're in that place where they're going, I don't really know anybody, so I guess I just need to start walking up to songwriters and asking them, can we write? Because you were saying before we started recording this that, like, no, you don't just walk up to someone you don't know and say, we should write.
Well, it's kind of funny because there's actually, I think it was Tin Roof when I first got to town, they had a shirt that was actually poking fun. It says, we should write sometime. And I was like, man, that's so funny. Now being here, I look at it, because that's literally what you do when you first get here. But there's I guess you would call it an etiquette. You just learn that songwriter etiquette. So if it's somebody you just played around with and they're on your level kind of thing, but you don't really go up to somebody that's got 16 number ones, go, hey man, we should write sometime. That you can, but you know, some of those guys are like, oh God, here he comes again. He's just going to ask me to write and germ, you know, whatever. So you don't necessarily want to be that guy, but hey, you definitely want people to approach you. So if you just go out and be yourself, play your songs, people are going to want to write with you if you're doing the right thing. And people, even if they're not that good, if you're a good person, you get a chance, I promise. There's a lot of great people here, and this whole world is put together by good folks, is how I like to say it.
Well, and there's also something to be said for recognizing that the hostess at the restaurant that's going to seat you, or the server at your table, or the insert list of other jobs here are probably songwriters. And so you don't want to come into town and all of a sudden your name starts getting around because you're the one that's cussing people out or making a scene in a restaurant when it's someone that you can end up in a writing room with a week or a month later.
Dude, you never know. You never know who you're talking to. I actually had a good buzz one time. That leads to a good story. Luke Combs' drummer, Jake Summers, I was in a bar. And now this wasn't that bad. I thought it was hilarious because I was looking at him. I didn't know who he was. And I just got to town, and Luke had just started kind of taking off a little bit, and I'd seen him all around, and I didn't know Jake though. I just saw him at the bar. He's just a guy at the bar. And I don't know if you know who Eli Roth is, but he's a horror movie director, writer. He did like Hostel and Green Inferno anyways. And I saw him, I'm like, dude, you look just like Eli Roth. And I literally like Google image Eli Roth and showed him. And the girls were like, the girls that were with him, like, I don't see it. And I guess they thought I was being mean. I was totally not being mean. I was like, you look just like him. This is awesome. Anyway, so that was my little naturally. Of course, I would do that. And then after being out, when I see him, I'm like, hey, Jake, what's up? You know, so not a big deal. But still, you never know who somebody is. To me, he was just a guy in the bar. Turns out, it's Luke Combs' drummer.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And so, yeah, you don't know who anybody is. And you, what's funny is I found out that pretty much everybody here, if you come from a small town or even a big one sometimes, you're a small fish in a little pond and you still think, just wait. You will be humbled once you get here and you will realize I was cool back home and now I'm just another one of those, you know.
Yeah. It might as well be mom and dad telling you how wonderful you are because you're going to come here and these people that don't know you will say, yeah.
Yeah. There's always somebody better than you. Just remember that. There's always somebody better than you. So the best thing you can do is just remember that and always be nice because you don't know who's who always. And so that would be my best advice is just be a good person. That's all you got
to
do.
And be
good
ready to learn. Be open to learning.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to close today with another one of Lee's original songs, one called Ending Starts. Before I let you go and I play that track, Lee, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Oh, boy. So this song is actually came from an idea I got from watching King of the Hill. Of course I did. So I was watching King of the Hill, and one of them, I think it was the, you know, the character that Tom Petty played with Luann. Anyways, and he goes, come on, baby doll, let's go home and start what we finished. And I was like, that's so cool, because like, everybody says, finish what you start. Yeah. And he's going to start what they finished because they done called it quits. And we were in the room, and we had actually already wrote a song that day. It was me, Dustin Herring, Trey Landon, who signed over at Warner, and my buddy Nate Kenyon, which I believe just signed a big record deal himself. And so Nate's like, we already wrote a song. What's funny, I got another idea from a meme I saw. What doesn't kill you only makes your drink stronger. So we wrote that one in like an hour and a half. And then we're like, let's write another one. So I threw that idea out. Let's go home and, you know, start what we finished. And Nate's like, what if we just call it Ending Starts? And I was like, dude, that's okay. What you got in mind? And then, like I said, he just projectile lyrics. And luckily we had hit record and we caught, you know, he just dropped a lot of it. And then we go back and, like I said, the song turned out great. It's, you know, whenever you can kind of see when somebody starts getting distant, you can see all those red flags and you can feel them pulling away, even though they don't tell you anything's wrong. You can sense it. And, you know, like I can always tell where the ending starts.
Wow.
So Good stuff. That's where that came from.
Lee, great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Bruce. It was great meeting you.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
With that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Lee Tucker. Do visit his official website at leetuckermusic.com. Again, I will put a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Once you land there, be sure to look for the store link for some really cool merchandise. Lee is on Spotify, so do give him a follow on there. But as I said before, purchase downloads of his original music from Apple Music. Social media-wise, you will see links on leetuckermusic.com for Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Find him on TikTok as well, where he is at Lee Tucker Music. For that matter, tell Lee you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Lee and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years now without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net. And then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 526. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Lee Tucker. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Ending Starts.
I
I say I love you, girl, you say you too. You don't say it the way that you used to. Call me crazy, but I don't think it's a loose screw. I think that I'm about to lose you. I can tell you ain't telling the truth. I don't wanna go, but I don't wanna go through. Feeling that fire burning out, knowing that high is coming down. 'Cause you ain't even with me, even when you're with me. Only wanna kiss me when you're tipsy on some whiskey. I can see the red flags and the signs. Girl, don't be surprised if I ain't surprised when you pack your bags and you break my heart. 'Cause I can always tell where the ending starts. Feels like I'm going the wrong way down a one way. Girl, there's only one way to turn this thing around. Spending every single Sunday praying maybe someday what we lost can still be found. I can't pretend you ain't pretending that it's okay. Hoping it ain't too late. Feeling that fire burning out, knowing that high is coming down. 'Cause you ain't even with me, even when you're with me. Only wanna kiss me when you're tipsy on some whiskey. I can see the red flags and the signs. Girl, don't be surprised if I ain't surprised when you pack your bags and you break my heart. 'Cause I can always tell where the ending starts. Uh-huh. 'Cause when it starts, it's too damn much. And baby, when it stops, it ain't enough. Feeling that fire burning out, knowing that high is coming down. 'Cause you ain't even with me, even when you're with me. Only wanna kiss me when you're tipsy on some whiskey. I can see the rain.